Welcome to Embracing Continuous Behaviour Change for Anger Management, the podcast that helps you to calm your emotions and communicate effectively. I'm your host, Claire Broadley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on calming your emotions and living a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to master your emotions. Okay, so good morning. It's foggy where I am.
Where are you?
I'm in Wigan.
Oh, I'm in Rossendale.
Oh, you're not that far then. No. Is it foggy where you are?
Very foggy where I am. We should have a rendezvous.
We should. Yeah, we could have done this in a nice coffee shop somewhere.
Next time.
Absolutely. So good morning to our listeners. As you can hear, we have another guest for you this morning. We have the, I nearly said your name then without saying the lovely. We have the lovely Lucy Wade with us this morning. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on. Been looking forward to this one.
Brilliant. You know, that's what I like, because I just like it to be just chilled out and relaxed. And we've had a quick chat before we've pressed record, and for it to just be everyday people coming in and talking about what's gone on in life, because our listeners are everyday people who are going through things in life or have been. And so for me, it's about just it being relaxed and chilled and just a talk.
Yeah, that's been real, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think, did I put it out on be a guest or, and I'm going to put this out very, very early on, we are both in a book collaboration together.
Yeah.
Aren't we?
Yes, we are. So, very excited.
Yeah, so that's it actually in a month. And I can't remember if I actually put it on the book collaboration, that if anyone wanted to come on a podcast, it might have been there.
I think you did, but also Mel linked us in a message and said, but yeah, I think I saw it in there. But yeah, we're a member of all sorts of things now, aren't we? But it's very exciting, this book collaboration.
Absolutely. Look at us two authors.
I know. Well, I wrote a book about 20 years ago. About being a teacher, a bit anecdotal, a bit tongue-in-cheek. But I haven't written anything since, so it's very exciting to do it with other people.
Absolutely. It's my first one. So you're right, it was Mel that put us that connected us. And I remember, and I've written it down, your email response back was, it's been a very tumultuous few years after a rather lengthy tumultuous decade. And then you ended it, I'm just on my third comeback.
Yeah.
And you sniggered when you said that. And I read it as a snigger, as in that she's saying that so lightheartedly.
Yeah.
But even writing the word tumultuous, you know that hasn't been lighthearted, and you know that hasn't been easy.
No, not at all. And there's been, what I like to do now is I very much like to, use the negatives and turn them into positives, and I've found that I'm quite naturally doing that anyway. I say I wrote a book 20 years ago, when I was a teacher. I was an English teacher in a very big school, and I was being bullied as a teacher by staff. So you know, and it was like nobody tells you this. No. Teachers are the holy grail. Teachers are the moral high ground. Teachers know everything, and teaches people, and some people are horrible. So I wrote a book off the back of that when I was feeling very down and very disappointed, and questioning my judgment in people and like my understanding of the world, basically. So I wrote a book off it. So I've been doing that kind of positive response sort of automatically, but I've recognized very recently that I now need to really work hard at that quite quickly, not have it get so dark so long, and I need to inject the positivity a lot earlier than I was doing.
But that's really good that you can see that, because, I mean, I don't know if that's from a place of depression, but I suffer with depression, and having gone through a really bad stage of depression, previously, when I wouldn't even open the curtains.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I lived in a village, and there was a village shop. But if I wanted milk, I would get in my car and drive to the nearest big Tesco and buy my milk from there, rather than just walk through the village to get the milk.
Yeah, because people who know you.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly that. So it's interesting what you said is that now, when you can kind of see that you need to put those positives in place, you're able to do it quicker.
Yeah, so I mean, 2016, I have endometriosis, and I did have adenomyosis, and that meant I had lost my teaching career in 2013. So I started my own chocolate business, which became very successful. We supplied booths, I supplied restaurants and bars in Manchester. I opened up my own cafe with the profits of that. I bought myself a car with the profits of my own business, very proud of it. And then I lost all three based of the same month. And I'd also been told, due to the endometriosis, I was quarter of the way through IVF, and then I was told, you have to stop this because if you get pregnant, you'll rip yourself apart. That was all in August 2016. And I just wanted to end it.
Yeah.
And kind of planned it. My husband was working away. I'm still on quite a lot of medication now. I was on more then. And I used to take 20 tablets a day. And when you have to take so many in one go, you learn how to neck them.
Yeah.
So even now, I can take 10 tablets in one go. It's not, you know, it's not a diet trick. It's the worst part. It's the darkest party trick ever. But I could do that. So I thought, right, my husband's working away. I live quite far away from my family. Nobody's checking in on me anyway. Mm-hmm. I felt utterly, utterly pointless as a woman, bizarrely. And it's not even like I've ever had a huge want for kids. Dogs, okay. Yeah, kids, nah. But I think having it taken away from me, it was like, right, so you can't be a proper woman, you can't be a proper wife. And I just felt, well, that's the only reason you're here, surely. That's the only reason you exist as a woman, is to procreate. Your mind tells you. I call it, the voice is called dickhead.
Ah, okay, you give it a voice.
Yeah, and it gets very loud sometimes. But this one night, I decided to do something about it. And I was stood in front of my dressing table, and I just emptied my Dosset boxes into my hand. And I took about two handfuls. Yeah. And as I'm taking a swig of water, I catch my dogs looking at me.
Oh.
And I just thought, shit, I've got to get up for you. I've got to get up in the morning for you.
Yeah.
You're why I have to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
And
they're your kids.
They were the reason I had to get up. I thought I had no reason that I had to get up in the morning. It was as black and white as that. I was a worry to everyone. In my head, I completely made sense of, yes, people will be upset once, but then I won't be a worry as I am all the time now. And I won't be moaning to everyone all the time now. So for me, it made perfect sense to just, I'll go. It'll, you know, rip the band-aid off, I'll go. But catching my dog's eyes, proper just looking at me under their frames. Yeah. It cut the thread, I call it.
Yeah.
It cut the thread. So my dogs are little lifesavers. But I think I was at the doctor's the morning after anyway.
Mm.
And I was in CBT therapy a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah.
Well, I like to say gaining my superpowers.
Fantastic.
Because my CBT therapist, Kay, was life-saving, you know. So going from that darkness, and then from that, I rebuilt my business, and I had a chain of shops. And Wow. I was very proud of it again. Mm-hmm. And then my husband decided to have an affair in October. Well, the affair wasn't in October. The affair was God knows how long.
Yeah.
But I found out in October, and as a chocolatier, that was a really bad time. That sounds really like shallow, doesn't it? But I was the one bringing in the money.
Yeah.
So it was like, right, well, I need to leave you, but I need to fix my business for Christmas. Yeah. So yeah, 2018 was another one. And I moved in with my parents. I'm still there, to be honest. I'm still with them. But the thing is, with endometriosis, it does keep coming back. So you kind of have, every time you have an operation, I kind of have about 5 years of feeling okay. So my 5 years of feeling okay sort of came to an end in 2022.
Okay.
Where I just started hemorrhaging, and I was in the middle of a children's party, which is not the time for that kind of horror show. So I was in the middle of a children's party, and I thought I was just hot and sweaty.
Oh, no.
It was the beginning of the adenomyosis, which is where growths happen within the muscle wall of the uterus. So it had started growing to the size of a sort of a four-month-old baby.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was told I had to have surgery. I then thought that was going to be in a couple of months. So I thought, right, well, I'll close the shop down, because I'll leave it on a really good high. You know, the reputation of the business was fantastic in our local town. I turned it more into a lifestyle business. I've got rid of two of the shops. We only had one shop left. And it was, I loved it. So I thought, right, we'll close the shop, as if when I come back in a few months, say 10 months, I'll pick it back up again. But the operation, that was January 2022. June 2022, I closed the shop thinking I'd be back by Christmas. Yeah. And I had the operation in April this year.
No.
Yeah. So I'd saved about 10 grand, because I thought, right, I need to know that I can be off and I can just not have to worry.
Yeah.
My nephew was working for me, and he was about to go to university. So it just made sense, right? We'll close it down. But I didn't account for two years.
No.
With no income at all. So I ended up on benefits last October, which is the most humbling thing I've ever done. Because I've always found a way. I've been eating cereal for tea and, you know, coppering up and selling whatever I could get my hands on out of my house to pay the bills.
Yeah.
I've always found a way. This time I couldn't. And I was lucky enough to be living with my parents anyway.
Yeah.
So, going on benefits. £380 a month I got.
Wow.
And I'd been earning about 7 grand a month with the shop. So, yeah. But then I went on PIP because the endometriosis just got so bad. I don't know if you know anyone who's had to go through the PIP process. But
I've heard it's absolutely atrocious because, well, for many, many reasons.
I'm an educated woman. I've got degrees and, you know, whatever. But, the way that that woman spoke to me was absolutely disgusting. And I wrote a letter of complaint afterwards, because you have to go through your mental health and everything. Mm-hmm. And I told her about the night that I'd wanted to, commit suicide. And she said, and have you felt like that again recently? I said, to be honest, yeah, I've felt like that probably about a week ago. I thought I had very scary thoughts. But and then straight away, without like a hit, so can you chop a vegetable? And I was already hysterical because I was telling her how I'd been very, very dark place. And then, but can you chop a vegetable? I was like, what?
Yeah, it's just no care at all.
Can you chop a vegetable? I said, what? I don't understand why you're asking me that. Are you refusing the question? I just don't know why you're asking. What? I said, I've just told you that I was practically suicidal last week. What? I don't know why you're asking me this question. so you can't chop a vegetable. I said,
oh my God.
Well, I have arms, so you can chop a vegetable. I said, well, I think so, but why would I be chopping a vegetable if I'm unable to get out of bed? But you can chop a vegetable. I said, oh.
Really? Wow, that's awful.
It was awful. And then I got the report through and she put that I refused to answer the question.
Oh, wow.
So, and there were a couple of those, like, how many minutes does it take you to get to the bathroom? And I said, well, on my worst day, I have to be carried. And she said, and have you ever timed that?
Gosh, that's...
I was like, no, I haven't timed it. Well, can you guess? I was like, I don't know. I said, The toilet is a couple of doors down from where my bedroom is. So if I have to be carried that short distance, then it's not good. So you're refusing the question.
Like, oh, wow.
I don't know. I said,
where's
I can't.
I'm not
making something up. So you're refusing the question. It was awful, honestly. And I'm, like I say, I like to think that my CBT therapy's done quite well for me, but God help somebody else who's really struggling.
Awful. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wasn't in a great place after that. But yeah, so that was last year. And like I say, I did go through another time when I had to get rid of everything that I'd bought, everything that I owned for the chocolate business. I had to sell what I couldn't sell. I had to get rid of because I couldn't afford the storage anymore. Yeah. So I remember the day driving back from waste management, just tipping everything into the back of the... I remember driving back from there and a car pulled out and I didn't break. I didn't speed up, but I didn't break. And I just thought, whatever. And that scared me. So yeah. I drove straight to my sister and told her. And she said, right, but you're telling me, so it's okay, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. If it's out my mouth, it's not going to happen. It's when I go quiet. That's when it's time to be scary.
But was I do that, think you telling yourself that, or was that actually how you felt?
What do you mean?
So when you said that your sister had said to you that you're telling me, so it's okay, and then you'd said, yeah, okay, because I'm telling you, that means it's okay.
Yes.
Was it actually okay?
No, I wasn't, but I knew I wasn't going to do anything.
Okay, right.
I knew I wasn't going to do anything stupid, so I did go to the doctors and I just spoke to them.
Yeah.
My GP was absolutely amazing because I sat down and he said, it wasn't even my GP, so what can we do for you today? And I just said, I don't know.
Oh.
I said, I don't know, but I don't feel right. I said, it's exhausting battling this feeling that I just want to stop.
Yeah.
And he said, you think you're suicidal? And I said, well, I don't think I'll do anything, but I just want to stop. I want it to stop. I want a break from my head. And he just talked to me. The person after me won't have been very happy because he knocked it on, gave me a double appointment.
Yeah.
But I just felt better for talking about it because I think this is exactly what I'm doing now. I'm talking about it. And I know it sounds a bit obvious, but just words coming out of my mouth rather than me saying it in my head is helpful. And if anybody else who's gone, like, the whole reason of what you're doing is to get to your listeners, to get to people with other people's stories, see how other people have handled things or going through things, to know you're not on your own. That is literally what's helped me in the last 10 years, is hearing the little nuggets of other people or the little sayings that other people have had that have just made me have that little different perception on something, bit different perspective, that has made me be able to find joy. And if I can do that by sharing my story, if somebody else can think, oh, right, well, I could try thinking like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to say that to myself. Because I've forgotten her name now, but she says, let them, you know, when somebody's annoying you, when somebody's putting you up in traffic, or when somebody's just doing something that you know, I've told them so many times. Yeah. Let them. Just let them.
I stay by that mantra as well.
Yeah.
Just let them. Because it's easier to let that go than to hold on to it.
Yes. And why are you holding on to it?
Exactly.
Who are you helping? They're not bothering
us. Exactly that. They're not. And if it was somebody who genuinely cared, they wouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's all that what you can change, what you can't change, get over and get on with, you know.
Yeah.
It's but yeah, that just that let them every now and then I've got to remember. Even like say somebody cuts you up in traffic and you could be like, oh, that's really, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm behind you now, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so I've got to like this ripe old age, whereas I can now let them, I can just get over it. Whereas, I'm not sure about yourself, whereas when I was in my 20s, 30s and 40s, I probably couldn't let them. Yeah.
And not only couldn't let them, didn't want to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you'd get into a gaggle of friends.
Yeah.
And you'd all feed each other's annoyance.
Absolutely.
By saying, oh, did you see that? Yeah. Did you see that? Yeah, weren't that annoying? I can't believe she's done that. And she did that and that and that. And you feed each other's annoyance.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you want to be annoyed. And it's like, why?
And that, yeah. And it's kind of almost like, I guess that's it. As we get older, we're more kind of, we're not in that close group with a lot of other people.
Well, not with people who I've definitely found my tribe.
Yeah.
You know, and that's literally in the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm 46, but I've just found my tribe. Where
and I think
be myself, talk exactly how I want to talk. I am a bit sweary, but I can absolutely be myself 100%.
And you're accepted. And that's what's amazing, isn't it? Is I think I wish I could have been this laid back in my 20s and 30s because it would have just made life so much easier.
Oh, yeah. But then I don't know whether or not I'd be this confident now. You know, it's even little things like this haircut. This haircut's very new.
I love haircut's that haircut.
Like, last month, I used to have quite long hair, but I've always wanted this hair.
Okay.
So I was just like, just do it. It'll grow back. I mean, they did cut it a little bit too short. This is 8 weeks of growth, to be honest.
Okay.
So they did cut it very short. But again, the only people I showed the photograph to of where it was really short was my tribe, was my friends that I've got now. Because I knew they wouldn't show it around. But I said, so this is the haircut and my face is like this. But it's just, it's really short. It was sort of... So you can see that there. That was shaved all the way up to the top.
Oh, wow.
You know, like when you see films of World War One, and they've just got it shaved up to the top and they've got a tiny bit of hair at the front.
Yeah. Was that you? Did you look like you'd just signed up?
Definitely. Definitely. And I'm 4'8". I was 4'9". They took an inch off me last month. But I'm only 4'8", so I need.
I love
hair.
It.
Thank you. I love it now. And like clothes, the clothes I wear, I love baggy clothes, but they make me look short. But I'm not bothered.
Exactly. Who cares? Just rock up, be you, and your tribe will accept you.
Yeah, but like you say, there's no way I would have had the confidence to just go for exactly what I wanted in my 20s or even in my 30s, you know, a little bit in my 30s. But no, not like now. Not like now. I mean, like I say, I am, I'm 46. I am in the middle of a divorce, which has been 5 years in the making.
Wow.
Ridiculous. I am, you know, I've just had a hysterectomy. I'm in my fourth menopause, final menopause, my fourth menopause.
Wow.
I've lost my business. I'm on benefits still. So I'm still unemployed, living with my parents. My dogs are 10 years old now. My dad's just come out of hospital. He's 18. I'm a proper daddy's girl. But I'm happy. I'm happy. Yeah. You know, I've got a tiny little studio in Barry Ford where I do my artwork, which my superhero dad has paid for. And I go there and I call it pissing about with paint. That's what I do.
But But that's fantastic, isn't it? It's that's obviously your space.
Yeah. Yeah, because I am back at home. You know, I have my old room. Well, I have my old mum and dad's room, actually. But I'm like I said, I'm used to having a house. You know, I had a three-bedroom house with garden front of, I'm now in still in a three-bedroom house, but it's not mine. I have a room. So, yeah, that space is really important. And also, like I say, this this collaboration that we're doing, things like that, I don't think I'd have had the confidence to do, because I remember the first time I wrote my book in when 20 years ago, I didn't tell anyone until I'd signed with Bloomsbury, because I just knew they'd be like, well, as if you're going to write a book. I just knew. So, whereas now, and a Mandy, who's our leader, who's the main author on this book, you know, she's given us all the confidence as well to know, go shout about it.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And that's so amazing, isn't it? Is that, I mean, my story is like something that I've never told my friends, and I've literally only recently put it out there on Facebook and completely owned it.
Really? So,
yeah. So there I was writing a chapter in a book thinking, yeah, I'm just going to tell the world. Who cares? Then thinking, you've not even told your best mate this, Claire.
I know.
But how weird is it to think that it's easier to tell the world than it is to tell your closest friends?
Because we know it's going to hurt them to know how hurt we've been.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way.
And it's I haven't told my mum. In fact, I've told my mum and dad they might not want to read it.
Okay.
Because they don't know. They don't know. They know that I've been in a dark place. They don't know the details of it. And I'm not sure whether or not that's helpful for my mum to see. Yeah. I'm my dad. I don't know. My sister knows. My sister's one of my best friends. She's the one that I do go to. And I say, scary moment, was about to do something stupid, but I'm not now because I'm coming telling you. So
brilliant that you can do that.
Yeah. We've got and now, like I say, this group that of women and men that I've met, people think it's a cult. It's very much not a cult. It's just an amazing group of business owners who just want to help each other. It's not, and that was a massive turning point in my life, is meeting this group. They are business owners, but the business owners that look like you and me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not in the suits. They're not in the pinstripe. They're not in power suits. They're not, you know, arrogant. They're ordinary people who want to make a difference in the world, and they've gone out on their own to try and do it.
Fantastic.
And we just love talking about business. It's a bit geeky. Talking about business and helping each other fix those problems. But after time, we just sit around chatting. Because we're business owners, you've got to find the right people to have the right conversations with. So like you've just said, you couldn't tell your best friend about something incredibly difficult you'd gone through, but you could tell somebody.
Yeah.
And that's what's important. You just have to have somebody to be able to get that out, because it has to come out. It cannot stay in your head. The more I talk about it, and I've done a couple of speaking things now with women's groups, the more I talk about it, the more matter of fact I can talk about it.
Yeah.
And like, I don't cry about it when I do talk about it, which is what I want to get to.
Yeah.
I did last Tuesday. Every time I'd practiced it, I hadn't cried. And then when I did it in front of this group of women, I could feel the tears coming. I was like,
I'm
a bit emotional. But yeah, I didn't want to get emotional about it, because it's, like I said, it's a scar.
Yeah.
In my past, that every now and then gets a bit itchy.
And I think that's a lovely way of looking at it, is that it's a scar, it gets itchy. It reminds you of how far you've travelled. It's like putting pins in maps, isn't it? It's like, I've been there. I might like to go back there, definitely not going there.
That is so good. Yeah, it is. You visited it. It was awful. And you don't want to go back there. Even if you have to drive through it sometimes, you're not stopping.
Absolutely. And that's really weird, you know. So talking back to the village that we mentioned earlier, is I drove through that village with Jen, my partner, last week, and it took me up until from leaving that village, it took me 2 years before I could drive through that village again, because I was going through so much turmoil, and the only way I could drive through it again was in a rental car. So they didn't know it was my car.
Oh, my God.
I rang a friend at the start of the village and said to them, I'm just letting you know, I'm just going to drive through this particular village. If I ring you in the next 10 minutes, you need to be getting to me.
Come and get me.
Yeah. And so when I got out of the other end, I rang them and said, I'm out now, fine, don't panic.
But I knew
but I knew I had to do that. It was awful. Awful. But like you say, sometimes you have to drive through things. And yeah. I physically did. Went through it last week with my partner in my partner's car. So again, it was a different car, but hey, we are
Still, it's still quite traumatic for you, is it? Driving through the village. You're quite well known in the village.
I used to be the village Bobby. So very well known.
Oh.
Yeah. And we're kind of going off onto me, but And do you know what? I am, to be fair, because it is, we're just having a chat about life. Yeah. I came out as being gay in that village. Well, I didn't so much come out to them as my ex-husband told the world. Yeah, because it's that kind of man.
Yeah,
And then a car pulled up and they tried to put my windows through at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, so you can understand why I didn't really want to be in that village anymore.
But this is in 2020?
No, that would have been in around about, how old was my son? That would have been about 2003.
But still.
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing, isn't it, that the pretense that everybody is welcoming and everybody is very PC and they literally just pay lip service to it, that's all.
Don't
pay lip service to it, live it. You know, because if you just pay lip service to it, you might as well just say the things that you mean. And I'd probably rather that than pretend that you're all right and try and put me in some false sense of security that it's going to be all right. And meanwhile, behind the scenes, you're doing that.
Yeah.
Wow. But do you know
who it was? It was a group of local teenage boys that were the people that turned up to throw the bricks at the house.
Did they know you? Dealt with them as a police officer?
Yeah, I had dealt with them. They weren't like the nice kids of the village, obviously. But do you know what I mean? It's like you would have thought the younger generation would have been more accepting.
It's, well, unfortunately, this is what I mean by, you know, there's this pretense that nowadays there's obviously a lot more tolerance, which is just a disgusting word to have to use anyway. Oh, you tolerate me, thank you. But the reality is that inbred discrimination is still rife.
Absolutely.
And you know, I was 2003, so I'm half Asian and I was a teacher, and one of my year nine lads was at the other end of the and I just taught him. We got on quite well, but he was with some other lads. And he just starts singing, we're going pecky bashing. At me. I'm like, what? I've literally just taught you.
Yeah.
We've had a lovely conversation. And they're like 13, 14.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
So that's come from home. It has to have come from home. He has to have heard that from adults.
Yeah.
So that's that generation buggered because that's been inbuilt there. So I could just imagine that happening in so many households.
Yeah.
And it must just be the ones who educate themselves and have a purer soul, I think, because I think some people are just evil. Some people are just lovely, no matter what backgrounds they've got. And we just have to hope that those voices will start to get louder and louder.
Yeah.
But you can't change people's thoughts, but you can change people's behaviour.
Absolutely. And that's kind of like what I try to do in not that I try to do, but try to help people do in my business is change those behaviours, you know, of if that's a negative behaviour, then let's move forward. What positive do you want? And like you said at the very, very start is that you now look to get the positive out of the negative things that have happened.
Yeah. What's the other choice? What's the option?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a life of misery, isn't it?
Yeah. But it must be so difficult for you, though, living in such a small village, that it's easier said than done, isn't it? To be like, well, you know, sod them. Not gonna let them get to me. It's easier said than done when you're faced with it.
Absolutely.
Every day you walk out your door, like you say, going to your own local shop to get milk becomes a horror show.
And it's particularly just, when that's your job, like you said, being a teacher, you've still got to do your job, but you're faced with the discrimination. It's like, how am I supposed to do that?
So I was teaching in Oldham when the Oldham riots.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I actually kept my ethnicity quite quiet.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it would be, it was filled with schools. So one side was rich. Big houses. Yeah. Another side was council estate, and on either side we had both categories of nice and horrific children and parents. But the riots were going on, so I made a decision that I wasn't going to be very open about who I was.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine because literally I lived your life. I can't believe I allowed myself to do that. How crazy is that?
You know, it's almost like that. Well, it is not almost. It's self-preservation, isn't it?
It is. And it is like easier said than done because somebody else would say, like I'd say to anybody, oh, sod them, be yourself. Yeah. Well, that's easier said than done. It's like dealing with a bully. Well, stand up to them. Well, that's not always the easiest thing to do. It's easier on the outside, and I know you deal with domestic abuse as well, and you know that's something I've experienced. And again, somebody from the outside can very pragmatically and logistically
tell you
logically say, you know, just get out. Just get out. So I imagine, did you have quite a few friends telling you to, well, just go out, don't bother about them?
No, to be fair, I think at the time, I think I just isolated myself from everybody because then it isn't just about what's going on in the village, it's what's going on up here.
Mm.
And then it was like complete isolation. So I don't know what you do when your mental health is bad, but for me, I isolate myself.
Yeah,
I take myself completely away. I become quiet, and like you said,
dangerous point though.
That's the dangerous time.
Yeah, it's not these people that are shouting out saying I'm going to kill myself or messaging you saying I think I'm going to top myself. They're not the ones who are going to do it.
Yeah,
the ones who are probably more likely to do something daft are the ones that have retreated, like you say.
Yeah,
they've taken themselves away from all situations to do with other people, and they've retreated. They're the ones to check on. They're the ones to really, you know, pester with, and you're right, because you need to interrupt that thread, because it's easier to step down into the darkness, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Step up into the light. Mm-hmm. It's always easier to walk downhill than uphill.
Exactly. And that is the scary thing of, like you said, you have people who will come to you with their opinion of, well, just do this. Well, you're not living it. You're not living my life. And so you do go further down into that darkness, into that hole of, right, well, I'll get away from them because I don't need that. And it isn't helpful.
No. Sometimes you just, I love Simon Sinek as well. I don't know whether you've heard of Simon.
I've heard of him.
Oh, he's, I have a bit of a girl crush on him. But he's somebody who just likes to inspire others to do the things they're inspired to do. That's what he says. And he says something where sometimes people just want you to sit in the mud with them.
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes they don't need a hand up. They just want you to sit there in the mud with them and moan about how muddy it is.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
It's true though, isn't it?
Because sometimes it's like, do you need a hug or do you need help?
Yeah.
Because they're two very different things. And if you are in tune with, or maybe if you've gone through it yourself, you are a little bit more in tune with it, then you can recognise the time when somebody just doesn't need you telling them what to do. And they just need to say, I can't believe you're going through that. I am so sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we just sit and have a brew.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you know, words are helpful, but sometimes the silence is more impactful. Like you say, the arms around you, that being held, is so much of what that person wants whilst they are dealing with it themselves in their own mind, that you're at least there, whether you've got physical contact with them or you're just sitting in, like you've just said, the mud. I love that.
You know, isn't it brilliant? I just, it was on a TikTok because I do follow him. I'm not obsessed, but I do follow him.
Of course not. Have you got posters in that room? I'm sure I can see a poster of him at the back.
Might be Gary Barlow. my room used to be filled with Gary Barlow. But find him on TikTok if you can, or even on Facebook, Simon Sinek, because he has these nuggets, which are just, that is exactly how everybody should be.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, and like I say, the people that I hang about with now in the business thing, the whole point of what we do is somebody comes with a problem. We are not allowed to tell them how to fix it.
Okay.
Until we have asked questions. So somebody comes with a problem and you have to ask questions. So how did things like, what have you tried? Have you tried that? Have you done this? How did that make you feel? And that's sometimes just a way to get somebody's mind away from the depth of mud they're in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just engaging the brain in thinking about the situation, not thinking about fixing it.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the situation. So I love that. I love that sort of way. And as an English teacher, you do that anyway as part of active listening and directional questioning, where it should be, somebody comes to you with a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just tell them what to do because you don't know what they've already done.
Exactly.
You don't know what solution is going to fix them. You don't know what solution they need.
Yeah.
Don't just think, oh, I'll do that.
Yeah. Exactly. And then it can become so infuriating when they're saying, do this, do that, do that. And you think, I've done all of that. And every time I keep saying to you, I've done it, then you give me something else that I've done.
Yeah.
And now I just feel like you're just, I don't know, picking at me.
Yes.
You say, ask me the questions. I'll tell you what I've done. And then give me a better answer.
Or it's okay if you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
It's absolutely okay if you don't know how to fix it. It is fine. I mean, you know, when somebody loses a parent or when somebody loses their partner, what on earth do you think you can say to make that situation better? Nothing. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Just sit in the bloody mud with them.
And that's it. At times like that, how many times do we hear that people don't go near you because they don't know what to say? And it's like, well, you're not expected to say anything. Just be there.
Yeah.
Turn up and say, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. And that's the as helpful as you can be.
Yeah.
It's just be there. Be normal with me, please.
Yeah.
Just be normal. Let's have a cup of tea and be normal. Let's talk about some shit or let's just watch some crap on telly and just sit with me. You know, and like you say, people do, they steer clear, don't they?
Yeah.
They do. No. It is, God, we're complicated humans, aren't we?
We absolutely are. We are, but then, sorry, go on.
No, I think I was about to agree with you about whatever you were about to say. we are, but if you are giving time to that person, it's not actually that complicated, is it?
No, it's not. And I was about to say, we are complicated, but look how amazing we are, because our body tells us time after time that we need things before we even know we need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I call it stop, look and listen. Do you remember that program?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. God, showing our age.
Oh, I know. I know I put it out on LinkedIn a while ago, and some of my friends are like, that's that. I was like, is that off? You were born in too late. But so I call it stop, look and listen. Stop what you're doing. Yeah. Get off the bloody hamster wheel. And when people say, oh, I haven't got time, I tell you now, there will be a time in 2 weeks that you categorically know you can take an afternoon off, or a morning off, or 2 hours, whatever. You know in 2 weeks there'll be a time you can do that. So book that out, don't touch it. And just stop. Go somewhere where it's quiet. Go sit in a chair somewhere. Go and have a coffee, whatever. And just look at where you are, what you're doing, what you want to do, and listen to your gut, listen to your heart.
Yeah.
Because again, this is a Simon Sinek thing where he goes into the biology of what the gut is, and it's not your gut, it's part of the limbic system. It's part of the brain, anyway.
Yes, there's three brains, isn't there?
Yes.
Your head brain, your heart brain, and your gut brain.
Yeah. And he says that part of the brain is where all decisions are made, but it has no power of communication. So that part of the brain is where the true decision is made in your gut, but the part of the brain that actually acts on the decision is the part that wants instant gratification.
So that's
listening to your gut. Listen to your gut.
Yeah.
Because it's right.
Well, I'm an MBIT coach, and that is what that's all about. So it's your three brains. It's your head brain, your gut brain, and your heart brain. I was trained in it probably last year. I've not used
all that stuff.
Pardon?
I love all that stuff. I think it's absolutely amazing.
And it's about talking to the different brains and seeing what they need. And I think your gut brain is about your identity.
Yeah.
So you know when you're doing something and suddenly you have this feeling in your gut and it's like, oh, I don't like that, then that's around what is going on for you in your identity-wise.
Ah.
There's other reasons as well, but it's mainly about how it makes you personally feel.
That makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, feel it in your gut.
I wonder if that's why when we get older, we listen to our gut a bit more because we know our identity a bit better.
Yeah.
And our values, I mean, I'm a stickler for values.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was drawn to you with your thing, because I think values are a big thing.
Absolutely.
I think if you share values with somebody, you're kind of drawn to them.
Yes.
But that's kind of how I like to choose to spend my time now, is with people who share my values.
But I don't like
having to pretend that I want to spend time with somebody anymore.
And you know, that's, again, boundaries, so important. And I think before we started talking, I was telling you about how I'd bought my podcasting mic in January because I'm going to be podcasting, and then I put it away. What I also decided at New Year was boundaries. That is my word of the year. And I love boundaries now. I'm just popping out boundaries left, right and centre. It makes it so much easier.
So when you put your first boundary in, did you find that the response wasn't as negative as you thought it was going to be? So that's why you came up with more boundaries?
No. So I put the boundaries in, and the boundaries have been the people don't like the boundaries. But that speaks volumes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because if you don't like the boundaries, you're not my person.
Exactly that. And it
whittles them out, doesn't it? Whittles out the bad ones.
Yeah. And it's saying, I don't want that. I don't like that. I'm not having it. I'm not prepared to. And they kind of push back on it because that's how they are.
Yeah.
So they still want to be close to you or near to you, but they don't know how to, like you've said, actually change that or not make it as difficult.
Yeah.
And I'm the problem. Well, I'm all right with that.
Exactly. And why is it that we only realise that when we get older?
Exactly. I hate that. It's like, why couldn't you have taught me this when I was 20?
I do try telling my my nephew's 21 and the other one's about to be 18. And my stepdaughter is 22 this week. And they all have really good heads on their shoulder. And I do constantly tell them. I mean, I've been my stepdaughter's stepmom since she was 5. Yeah. And her mum's an amazing, strong woman as well. Mm-hmm. So she's got a really good head on her shoulders. And yeah. I remember when she was being bullied at school, for high school. And she just said, not bothered. They're obviously just not very nice people. I'll just stay with the people that I find nice. God.
Yeah, how fantastic.
You're an amazingly healthy human. She did go through a bit of a blip, to be honest, when she was 18, 19. That was a very dark time, but that was a dad. But there's hope in the future generation, I think.
Absolutely.
I'm blowing smoke up my own ass, but when there's people like us around and my sister and you know, my stepdaughter's mum, when there's women like that around, especially, because that's who I think children listen to more.
Yes.
They, when they're younger, they possibly listen to look at what their dad's doing, but they actually respect their mums a lot.
The mum. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And because I think they can see themselves in their mum, or they can see what mum's been through.
That's exactly what's happened. That is exactly what's happened, especially with my nephews. Mm. They've just realised, and because she's given them the space to realise, she's not pressed it on them. She's just given them unconditional love. She's given them utter support. They've got an amazing network of support around them. And because of that, they've come to the realisation themselves, in which case they believe it.
Yeah.
You know, not somebody's told them this has happened and like, yeah, whatever. They actually completely believe it with their heart, and it's just made more of a stronger relationship. Same with my stepdaughter. You know, I've not been with her dad for, 6 years now, and we're still incredibly close.
That's lovely. You know? That's so nice.
Beautiful creature.
I feel like we've absolutely got a second part to this podcast.
Yeah, Janet. What? Oh my God, it's 11 o'clock. Oh my God, I was meant to be somewhere.
Oh, sorry. I'm holding you back. Right, well.
I've had such a lovely time. Honestly, I could chunner away.
I have as well. No, don't be apologising, because we've talked about the strength that you've had to get through. In fact, we've talked about both of our strengths. It's been just been a really nice chat about life. So yeah. I would love it if you'd come back and be a guest again, just to say, right, that's what I went through. This is how I've, the resilience that I've shown, and where. Would you do that?
Oh, yeah, lovely. And I think because we are quite close, we can rendezvous. Yeah,
absolutely, that'd be fab. We can have that coffee. It might be a silent podcast and just know we start together having a brew.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much, Lucy. It's been
Thank you, Claire. Fun. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. I love it. And if I could do this more, I've no idea how to do that, but I love it. Absolutely.
Well, we'll do a podcast. We'll do the next one and I'll show you how to do it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Oh, lovely to chat with you, and I will see you soon.
You will do. Thank you.
See you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed listening to the episode and learned some tips on how to manage your emotions in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to calm your emotions and communicate effectively.